If you asked me 5, 7 years ago if large heat pumps, the ones that go into district heating systems, would be popping up everywhere in the Danish district heating landscape, like mushrooms everywhere, I would have looked at you and thought you were, well, you didn't understand much about our systems. Only the supervision area at that time had the slightest idea about what was about to happen. Today, I travel around the world and tell everyone that electrification through heat pumps and electric boilers is the new super green. These technologies can, in different ways, do a lot of good stuff. They support the electricity grid in new ways. They lower heat prices dramatically. Let's get to work now and get into this podcast about electrification and heat pumps. Welcome to DBDH's District Heating Podcast. In this series of podcasts, we invite experts from the industry to highlight important and current developments in our industry. And if we could, we would also like to push the policymakers a tad forward. The goal here is to share knowledge, to inspire, and also maybe to provoke a bit, to give insights. This is the DBDH District Heating Podcast, and I'm Morten Hjorth Dugdal. To discuss this important topic about electrification, I have invited two super colleagues into my studio. One is a managing director of a small district heating company in Denmark. I guess you have around 750 homes, one family houses or so, Tony. Welcome to Tony from Sønderfelding District Heating. A real front runner in this game. Next to Tony, I have Ebbe Nørgaard from the heat pump manufacturer Fenagy. Welcome also to you, Ebbe. Two real experts. Now let's get them to talk a bit and me to be a bit more quiet. First, I would like to get an idea about who you are and who I've invited into this podcast. Tony, go ahead. Please share a few details about yourself and the Sønderfelding project and your heat sources and so on, please.
Good morning. Thank you for inviting me. My name is Tony Dam Jensen, and I'm the manager of a small district heat company with approximately 750 consumers. I've been here in Sønderfelding in the last 12 years, and I've been in charge of this transition from only biomass to our take on the green transition. It's been a transition to electrification with overcapacity and energy storage, and it's with both an electrical boiler and a heat pump. And some of the benefits we have achieved is a wider spread with electricity and biomass, and another benefit is a really attractive production price.
Yeah, we'll come back to the production price a little bit later because really attractive. People will be surprised, I think. Ebbe, Fenagy, you, who are you?
Well, thank you, Morten, also for inviting me. My name is Ebbe Nørgaard. I'm the sales director for the heat pump manufacturer Fenagy in Denmark. We have supplied a lot of heat pumps to the Danish District Heating Society here amongst the two heat pumps that are installed in Sønderfelding. So Sønderfelding has been a really nice collaboration for us because Tony has been a front runner when it comes to, let's say, explore the possibilities for heat pumps in this electrification. And I think that no one really thought that when they did their investment that they could have anticipated what where we are today, so to speak. I'm a mechanical engineer, and I think it's not a big thing. I've been working with energy systems for my whole life, my engineering career, and the job that I have now is the most fantastic I've ever had because we're really shutting down some chimneys now.
Good. It's great you enjoy your job. In the warm-up to this podcast, we had a lot of discussion about all the benefits to society that the electrification through heat pumps and electric boiler does. I need to understand, I think I understand a bit of it, but I think we should dwell a little bit on this is not only a benefit to the district heating company and thereby to the consumers, it's also a wider benefit to society. Maybe Ebbe, you will go on, and Tony, just interrupt him if he speaks too much.
Well, yeah, one of the things why I enjoy this job so much is because that we are really taking part of this green transition at the moment in a really, really nice way. When we talk here about policymakers and let's say everything about the electrical grid, how large, everything, there are bottlenecks all over the place. How can we do this? We need to consume the electricity when it's available through photovoltaic systems and wind turbines and so forth. What we are doing and what our partners in district heating systems are doing at the moment, they are doing exactly what everyone is dreaming about. They consume the electricity when it's cheap, but that's also at the same time when it's beneficial for the grid. And I know that
you could say that it's actually when there's too much electricity. Could you say that?
Yeah, but that, yes, exactly. But that corresponds to the pricing as well, more or less.
Exactly.
So,
yeah.
So one thing is, let's say, I think most people today have an understanding of fluctuating electricity prices. At least if they have an electrical vehicle, they have an app, they can see day ahead prices and so on. So they have an understanding that the prices go up and down. That's one parameter, but looking more deeply into the commercial market of this electrical system, it's much more complicated. And this is where Tony is, have an insight that I don't have really. So every time I have I think I have an understanding, I always call Tony to say, what do you think, Tony? Can you help me?
So let's ask him.
Yeah, but for sure, when we started this project in Sutter Filling, we had the same thoughts as Abe just said. We had a look at the day ahead prices and saw the bigger difference from high to low, and thought that was the way for us to make cheap heat production, because that's, after all, that is our main object here. Quite fast we understood that it's not just about picking out the cheap hours of day ahead, but also there is grid balancing services you can do for the TSOs in Denmark. It's Energinet, and these grid balancing services gives you some kind of payment as well, which can make a cheap production price. So we did have a good look into these markets, and today we try to use or to be available in all of the markets here in Denmark. And for my, it's AFR, it's MFR, and it's FCR, but primarily AFR these times.
AFR, Tony, just short.
Yeah.
What
yeah.
is it?
AFR is a 5 minutes ramp time in and 5 minutes ramp time out. And that's, for years ago, it seems like an impossible job for a heat pump. We had quite a nice run together, me and Finity, to try and get this unit approved for AFR, and we were the first last year to get this AFR approval. But it's just it sometimes it seems quite complex because it's 5 minutes ramp in and 5 minutes ramp out, but it's possible with these new flexible heat pumps.
Yes, if I can add just a little bit, I think I know what this abbreviation stands for. I think it's automatic frequency response reserve. So AFRR, I think. And the MFRR is a manual frequency response reserve. So these are the abbreviations that are, you, let's say, you could say, invented by the TSO around Europe. So it's not just in Denmark that these services exist. The TSO is the transmission system operator. as Tony mentioned, it's Energinet in Denmark. They have a collaboration with the other TSOs in Europe. So these abbreviations, these services where you can balance the grid, if there's a overcapacity in the grid, you need to turn something on that consumes more electricity, or you need to turn something off that produces electricity. And this is exactly what Tony is doing with his heat pump and, of course, also the electrical boiler. And then you could say, does it make sense to use a heat pump, which consumes only 1/3 of the electricity as the electrical boiler does? You could say that we have this COP factor that we talk about for heat pumps, the coefficient of performance, which means that for a heat pump, you add, let's say, 1 megawatt of electricity, and then out comes 3 times more heat, because you get from some, let's say, free source. It could be air, it can be river water, it can be anything. But you get some free energy coming into the system from the heat pump. So that's why you produce more heat than you consume electricity. Everything goes into the district heating system.
Yeah.
That is, in essence, what a heat pump is, isn't it? Yeah. You put electricity in, and then you have an air source or whatever source, and then it does it's magic, and then it's more magic. Heat comes out. Yeah. Because I don't need to understand the heat pump. Maybe Tony, you had a comment as well, yeah?
Yeah. But actually, having both the electrical boiler and the heat pump is what makes my setup very robust. I think in these periods with the large heat demand, the efficiency of the heat pump is essential for me. And in other periods with larger and quicker consumption from the electrical boiler could be preferred for me. It depends on which market it is, how much the need is for regulation, and then these two units in collaboration makes it possible for me to deliver all of these grid balancing services for sure.
Good. I think we jumped ahead of ourselves.
Yeah.
Tony, what is it you have? You have heat pump, exactly. An e-boiler, and you have an old biomass boiler or something, and you have a storage and all that. Tell us a little bit, what is it you have?
Yeah, I have a 4 megawatts biomass boiler, which used to be my absolutely primary production unit. For now, it's an absolutely backup unit right now. And actually, we haven't had the need to use biomass the last 12 months right now. And that, of course, is because economy-wise, the electrical production has been by far the cheapest choice right now. On the electrical side, I have a 10 megawatts electrical boiler, and I have a heat pump, which is around 2.5 megawatts in cold condition, and it's actually up to 4.5 megawatts in hot conditions. And the key for me to these two things is the oil production and the energy storage, and which leads me to the energy storage, which for me is a thermal storage of 3,300 cubics or 230 megawatt hours, which is quite large. It'll make it possible for me to store up to almost 14 days of heat during summertime and approximately 2 days of heat during the wintertime. Yeah, I think the city consumption is 1 megawatt approximately during the summer and 5 megawatts during the winter. So I have quite some overcapacity.
Yes, and if I can just add a little bit here, because Tony has so many nice, let's say, pictures, imaginations that he had a statement at some point, which I really love. He said, "I used to be a heat planner, but now I'm an electrical planner." I think that's something worthwhile to think about, because it's exactly what it's about. And it's a totally different job for you, isn't it, Tony, today than what it used to be?
Yeah, for sure it is. I think we did, as I said to you earlier, heat planning was absolutely my primary job. And now I think 90 to 95% of the time I I have a look in the on the electrical side of the of this, and heat is some kind of a waste product of this electricity. It's not, but the good thing is it's not a waste product in this case.
It's actually your primary product, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is. But yes. My focus is sometimes more on the electrical side, because that's how I reduce the heat production price.
So one thing is, which is very important, and it's difficult to understand just listening to a podcast, but you've had so many visitors, both Danish colleagues and but also people from mainly Europe through your site. And what everyone is so stunned about, one thing is your temperatures. They take pictures of your return temperature and your supply temperature. They say, how is that possible? For us in Denmark, this is normal. But it's very unique, and we are really, really good at having low temperatures in Denmark. Another thing which they are so stunned about is your tank, the size of your accumulation storage. They say, "Wow, wow, that's crazy." I say, "How can you do that? Why? Why?" And for me, I only sell the heat pumps, but I normally say that. You shouldn't, as I would love to sell accumulation storages as well, because these two units come together. If you only have something that consumes electricity and produces heat, then you have no flexibility. And if you want to explore and exploit and help the society, have this good story, you need to be able to turn it on and off, these machines. This is where it benefits the society. This is where the business case is hidden. And that, I think, Denmark is, to my knowledge, and I've seen quite a lot now looking at our colleagues in Europe and also further away, that this is where Denmark is very unique. We have a very mature district heating system. We have quite a good electrical system, and we have a lot of digitalization. So we have all the systems that we need to, and we have a well-developed commercial electrical market. It works. So this is, and you usually say that if you look into the glass ball and look into the future, if it's a bit dizzy and the wind starts to blow, here comes a picture of Denmark. This is going to be the future. Let's say, I hope it will be, because this is fantastic. So what we're doing with electrification of district heating is, you could say, power to X. In this case, the X is heat for district heating. It's simple. It's not something that we have to do research about in universities, have to make really expensive new projects, subsidies from all over the place to invent something which is very futuristic. This is power to X. It works now. It's simple. It's cheap compared to the alternatives. And it works.
Yeah, and even though grid balancing sounds complex in some ways, I think the actual physics from getting this activation signal from the TSO and all the way to the heat pump is actually quite simple. I think it's just production of hot water, as we know it from back in the days. It's just a star signal, which is different, but it's just hot water.
Exactly. I would like to dwell a little bit more on the integration with the electricity market, because in a way, we have the fluctuating price signals. If prices are low, heat cost will be low. They will be very low with a heat pump, and they will just be low with an electric boiler, because electric boiler is a COP of one, and a heat pump has much better efficiency. Then there is the balancing market, and you said there was this 5-minute market. Tony, what do you? You had a number about. If we just take away the most expensive part of the electricity price and only operate in the medium and low price, there was a lot of savings to be done. Can you give us a few insights into that?
Yeah, and that was quite much in the early days of this strategy we made in Sønderfelding. We had a look at the day ahead prices and seeing them in these days, they differ from zero and even minus in some hours right now with a lot of this photovoltaic, and the most expensive hours in Denmark at the moment right now is about 100 euros per megawatt hours, and just shaving off the top 20% of these of the hours, 2 or 3 hours, would be enough to lower the average price, production price, with 50% or even more in some cases, because there's this major difference between top or bottom in the day ahead market.
And then you need a storage. Do you have any guesstimate on what is the payback on your storage? Do you have an idea?
No, not exactly on the storage actually, but the storage is still a key for this. You can't have one without the other. I think
No.
There's no need for overcapacity if you don't have storage, and there's no need for storage if you don't have overcapacity. And both things
Yeah.
is actually just key to doing all of these stuff, grid balancing and green transition, in my opinion.
And then when you are getting accustomed to the high low prices, the standard fluctuation, everybody with an electric car know about them because we know when to charge our car. That's when the prices are low. You are also in that kind of in that market, but of course on a bigger scale. Then you jumped into the balancing market. But I have always heard that I won't say heat pumps are slow to react, but they are slower than, for instance, an electric boiler. And then you are in this 5 minute. How does that work? Is it possible to run a heat pump like that?
It is for sure. For sure, the electrical boiler is much quicker and much more powerful. But the heat pump is it is a possibility for it to run in these conditions with the 5 minutes ramp in and ramp out. And it for sure has made my setup more robust in financial or economical ways. I think if at anything, I would ask Ebbe to have more focus even on making these heat pumps even quicker, because I think the future will just have a need for even quicker. And I can see absolutely no future without heat pumps in grid balancing. I think that's a key for the future as well. Big heat pumps in grid balancing.
Okay, but that was directed to you. Do you have them?
Yes.
Do you get them? Are you working on it?
Yes, well, I don't know where to start because, yes, well, when Fenity was founded 5 years ago, we didn't know about this, let's say, this market opportunity at all. We were just told that if you can start and stop your heat pump within 15 minutes, it's fine, it's good. And that was easy. For our kind of heat pump, CO2 heat pump, which is very different from let's say ammonia systems, which were more dominant before Fenity was introduced to the market. So I would say that let's say our systems are already from the beginning, from the nature of how we built them, more able to react fast. So once we got the insight to the market, one thing that we started out with was to remove our frequency converters because there's no need for using part load in district heating. When Tony has this big accumulation storage, it's just on or off. No part load needed. I think that's pretty obvious for everyone to understand here. So secondly, we started to learn about these system services, and and we saw that we could actually, we thought we could get in within those 5 minutes to start and stop, and just be aware that this is an air source heat pump, which is quite, let's say, slow thermodynamically. We need to make sure that we don't ruin anything when we start it and stop it so fast. But then Tony was the, let's say, should we say the playground or the workshop or whatever, where we tested how fast could we do this?
He was the naughty kid that did whatever he pleased to do, was he not?
Well, I think actually it was me who reached out to Tony, because I was contacted by the TSO in Denmark, because they had learned, together with some of the balancing companies, that the CO2 heat pump can do something different than the larger, let's say, existing heat pumps in the market. So therefore, I contacted Tony. Tony, are you interested in playing with us to find out what can we do? And yes, he was, and we were happy about that. So Tony is the only one right now who is running his heat pumps on this AFRR market. And I think it's important to say that in this case, where the cheapest heat production prices are in the AFFR upregulation. That means that when you talk about upregulation, you need to see it from the TSO perspective. So they need more electricity in the grid by shutting off Tony's heat pump. So Tony's heat pump runs according to he knows what the price is, because that's day ahead. Down, Tony, you can correct me if I'm wrong. That's let's say an average market price, which is feasible for the heat pump, better than for the electrical boiler. And then he can turn it off for very fast, because if there's a signal from the TSO that you can get more money to shut it off, Tony does. And you can, how many times can you do it in a day, Tony? 20 times, 40 times, something like that.
Much more, I think, actually.
Yes. And then secondly, everyone asks us, how is the lifetime of the heat pumps influenced by this way of running the equipment? And that is a very, very good question. And we can't answer it firmly. We can only guess, and we come with all our best, let's say, knowledge, experience going 20 years back with CO2 heat pumps. And we actually think that it's okay, because these heat pumps are the compressors, which is the heart of the system, are designed for another application where they are used to start and stop 6 times per hour. So the crucial thing here is that, or the important thing here is that the heat pump, as long as it's kept warm, and it is, because it's been running on, you turn it off for, I don't know, 1 minute or 5 minutes or whatever, and then you turn it on again, it's still warm. And then it's not a big thing to start and stop these kind of compressors many times. At least that's our best judgment so far.
Yes, Tony?
Yeah, and of course, we know as well as plant owner that there is some kind of extra stress on both on the heat pump and the electrical boiler as well. But for now, the production price of doing these grid balancing services is that it's in large periods of time, it's actually possible to produce heat for free. And that's something I think everyone can understand is positive and gives us some kind of leverage for the stress we put on these heat pumps. And in 2024, we had a split between the heat pump and the electric. It was 85% heat pump running and 15% electrical boiler. And I think the AFRR started in October 24, and I think it has changed a bit. And I think we have even more start stops right now. And I think that it's more balanced out between the heat pump and the electrical boiler.
And in the end, it is now, we don't know exactly what it is, but in the end, it is a balance between do we stress our hardware, our capacity, our investment? Yes, we do. Maybe we do. We don't know exactly how much it is. Ebbe, you say it's not a lot. Compared to, we move the heat price from whatever it was before to something that is much lower. And I know, Tony, you won't really tell us, but you said sometimes here, you said that you could have income. So let's just say that the heat price, the cost per kilowatt hour consumed by your consumers is very low.
Production price is very low at the moment. That's for sure.
Very,
that's for
very,
sure.
very low.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm now convinced it can. We can do these things, and that's is part of this the purpose of this podcast. I hope there's a lot of European listeners or from all over the world, and we are running out of time. I will just say that it is important. We have discussed the benefit to society. We have discussed the benefit to the district heating company and thereby to the consumers a lot. It is essential that policymakers around the world and the TSOs and so on see this opportunity and let district heating companies across Europe do the same. It is beneficial for everybody, and it is not only for the district heating company, it is for society. I know I cut this short, but I think that is an essential message also to send. Make this possible out there. That also covers my highlights of this podcast. It can be done. Tony even went so far to say it's simple. It is at least technology that we know. A heat pump, a district heating system, a storage, an electric boiler. None of that is super complex, and put together, they are not even complex. And then you get a price signal from the TSO and you react to that. In that way, it's simple. It requires some skills, of course it does. That is my primary takeaway. This is doable and it is just, I'm making quotes, air quotes now, it is just putting together a system that has some overcapacity so you can benefit from having a storage. Storage is, when it comes to it, that is essentially the key. That was the short conclusion. I have, the tradition is in these podcasts that both Ebbe and Tony, give us a comment, give us a shout out, give us something, a recommendation. Ebbe, should we start with you?
Yeah, well, the only thing that I have in mind now is that I don't know if I answered Tony's question right before about looking into the future, about being even faster in reacting with our machines. I can promise you, Tony, we are working on it on a daily basis because this is a unique selling point for us, and we think it's going to be more and more important in the future. Me,
that was an invite to the next podcast when you have done that. I look forward to that.
Yeah, okay, good.
Yeah. Tony, recommendations?
Yeah, what? I have something. First of all, I'll just say I think it's perfect because I can't see a future without these flexible heat pumps. And my my recommendation to all is to just be brave in this thing. Invest in overcapacity and energy storage, and that's because that's the only way you will have flexibility. Buy something that's big, flexible, robust, and agile, because that's what I think is necessary for the green transition in this energy sector. And of course, remember the coupling between balancing needs and this easy-to-grab energy buffer we have in district heating is a perfect match. That was my recommendation.
Ebbe.
Yeah, just a small comment. This is one of the things that's really on top of my mind always, is that when you sit there and you evaluate your business case, you should really think it differently. You should really think it differently. Don't just look at average prices of electricity, COP factor, and then it's easy. But that's not reality. You should really think about what Tony has done here, and not just Tony, but other places in Denmark. Flexibility, energy storages, and then you start to look at your cost.
That was it. Thank you to both of you to taking time to share your knowledge here. It has been a pleasure having you in my studio, and we are in a fascinating industry, an old industry that keeps on developing. As I started out saying, 5 years ago, or 7 years ago, nobody thought about this. Now it's popping up everywhere. There are new things to benefit, to do still. And I hope other countries will follow suit. That is, after all, my daily work to convince other countries to do something similar. Some technical stuff. This podcast will be available on all podcast channels you can think of and on our DBDH website and, of course, on DBDH LinkedIn. And dear listener, should you have a question or a comment about the heat pump or the district heating or the markets, feel free to reach out to any of us and feel free to follow us at our LinkedIn profile.